Wake up, State Line.
Your body's changing. My body changed. Grandma's body.
What's going on?
It's time to start your day with Randy and Company.
Get off my lawn!
Lighten up, Francis.
Talking about all your favorite teams from preps to pros.
70% of the broadcast, I felt like he's just running around being all red and hot in the face, and sweaty and screaming at people.
Now, here's your leadoff man, Randy Roof. Randy Ruff.
I'm very, very excited.
It's our first game, too.
Good morning, State Line. How you doing? It's Randy and Company on Sports Fan Radio 1330. That's wonderful Friday morning. I am the Randy of Randy and Company, and starring as the company next to me is Matt Trowbridge with the Rockford Register Star, and of course our producer, Eric Jordan Gothy.
If I'm company, how come there's never cookies or anything that, you know?
You know,
you should treat your company better than that.
I should, yeah. I'm not the best host as it is. And Jordan will attest to this. We've been doing this for over 2 years now. And how many times have I brought you food, Jordan?
Like once I believe. I'm not counting the hot dogs, so yeah, once.
Oh, you should count the hot dogs.
Nope.
That was a treat.
Nope. That was not a treat. Right. That was something else.
That was almost a year ago, a wonderful day when you got to eat a half a hot dog. It was awful. Boiled in the morning.
Yeah, Parkview hot dog.
In the morning. That's right.
Not making that mistake again.
I know this is going to be a good day, only because of one thing. You know, where I come to work, I come straight down Alpine. When I hit Alpine, it's at 173 at the top there, and take it all the way down to Sandy Hollow Road. I think I go through 13, 14 red lights. I only hit one red today on the way in. That has to be some kind of an omen, some kind of a sign, because I just flew all the way in, barely had a touch but brakes.
Now, you only hit one red light, or you only stopped for one red light?
Well, don't get literal on me now. Actually, both. So I just said, okay, this is a good sign. We're going to kick this morning off in great fashion, great form. So looking forward to it. We got a lot of really cool stuff we're going to talk about today. Matt came up with the idea, which is a great idea, because what's going on tomorrow night, the Fred VanVleet celebration, downtown Rockford, that we should spend a good chunk of this morning's show talking about Fred, memories of him. You worked with him a whole lot more than I ever did. So, you know, you're going to have a lot more memories. And you actually had a great story that was in the paper this morning. It's online. I don't know if you posted it last night or whatever it was. But either way, of basically the coverage of Fred VanVleet in the Register Star throughout the years. Just little excerpts from different times, like the first time he appeared in the paper, the first time when he committed to college, when he, you know, all these different things, when he decided about going to the NBA, all that kind of stuff. You know, I'm looking forward to doing all that, talking all about that, because tomorrow's a big celebration. If you want to get in that conversation, we'd love you to give us a call. Give us any memories you have, whether you've never met the man in person, you have a personal contact memory, or just a great memory of watching him play, whether it be here in town or at Wichita State or in the NBA. How Fred touched your life as a fan, as a basketball fan, as a fan of Rockford sports. That number is 815-874-1330, 874-1330.
And you can even call in if you don't want to hear Randy tell once again his story about how he coached Fred for about 2 minutes in a youth basketball game, please call 874-1330 and say, Randy, get another story.
Well, that's just it, because I told Jordan the guest yesterday, because I said that you had mentioned we could talk about it. It would be a great idea. And I said my biggest story is always the one I've told at least 6, 8, 10 times. So I'm like, okay, I'm not going to tell that story again. Actually, you just kind of did it for me, so therefore I don't really have to. Definitely don't have to tell that story. So I look forward to that. It'll be really fun. And in the second hour, too, we've got a couple of great guests here. Ann Bloomfield of the Rockford Park District. She's the head of the golf services, and she's going to kind of update us on what's going on in golf around Rockford. There's a lot of events, a lot of changes maybe in the courses and things like that, and things that are coming up. So she's going to kind of enlighten us on what's new so far this year and what's coming up for all you area golfers. And then at 7:15, Bill Kennedy. He is the event chairman for an event in Janesville called the Janesville LPGA Senior Pro-Am. It's a first-time event. It's going to be held August 3rd and 4th at Janesville Country Club. And it's very similar to our Rockford Pro-Am, in which they're going to have amateur teams of three paired up with, I think in their case, two pros. But they're all LPGA pros and also LPGA pros who are 45 and older. So it's basically senior pros. So we'll hear more about that event and what it's all about and why they did it and kind of the how they got the pros together and everything. So look forward to that. 7:30, Cody Grant joins us. Of course, Cody's been a guest many times. He's from the Zone Madison. He's going to talk a little update with about the situation with the Milwaukee Brewers. They had a big shakeup yesterday in their roster, as well as talk a little bit about the Milwaukee Bucks and where they might be heading with free agency, which begins on Sunday. So a lot of really cool stuff going on, but I want to quick go over Jordan. Jordan had an eventful day yesterday.
I wouldn't say eventful. I would say painful day. You know, all right, so.
Go ahead.
Have you ever had, Randy, I know you have. Yep. Matt, have you ever had an ingrown toenail?
They're
not fun.
No, okay, good. Glad you didn't.
Yeah, they're not fun. And I had to get that removed. I had to get a couple of shots in the toe. That hurt.
Yep.
And then once they actually pulled, I don't know if the numbness wasn't fully working or not, but I could feel everything. So when they cut it open, boy, did that hurt.
Uh-huh.
And it was numb afterwards, so the numbing was still there for like an hour afterwards. But once that thing wore it off, oh, boy, did that hurt again.
I saw them doing, that's exactly, I thought, because I had this done, this is like one of the first or second years I was at the Register Star. And I had that done also. And I thought maybe technology and medicine had changed a little bit, because I remember the pain of the shots. And I remember I didn't feel them clipping it off. But then I remember going to work that night, sitting at the copy desk, because I was layout guy at that time. Sitting at the desk, just typing away, and all of a sudden, the whatever it is, the wore off, and the numbness wore off.
Yeah.
And it was just throbbing. I'm sitting there trying to lay out the newspaper and edit stories, and it was just boom, boom, boom. You feel a heartbeat in your toe.
Yeah.
So that was brutal.
It feels awkward to walk. It really does. Because every time we take a step, I don't know, it feels like this. Because I have it wrapped up pretty heavily, but it just feels like extra pressure. It just feels awkward.
Well, you're going to struggle. You're going to push on through today's show, though.
Yeah.
All right.
Luckily, if I'm sitting, it's fine. I'm just walking. It's just awkward. That's all.
So just stay still while you do headlines. And I want to jump into headlines. Really fast, so we have a lot of time to talk, Fred. And there's a lot of headlines to talk about, boy, between baseball and some NBA stuff, and it's just a lot of stuff going on. So I tell you what, Jordan, why don't you jump right into it right now.
The All-Star starters were announced yesterday, first in the American League. Let's just run through them. Gary Sanchez playing catcher from the Yankees. Carlos Santana, first base for the Indians. Second base, DJ LeMahieu from the Yankees, well-deserving of it. Shortstop, Jorge Polanco from the Twins. Alex Bregman from the Astros at third base, along with George Springer and Michael Brantley in the outfield from the Astros. Mike Trout, of course, from the Angels, best player in the game. And Hunter Pence making a surprise return at DH
Hunter
from the Rangers.
Pence, he was one of the most annoying batters to watch because he looks like he's got
the weirdest stance.
Class ants in his pants. He doesn't sit still. He's got a weird stance. He's got a weird swing. And actually, when he's in the defense, he throws the ball weird. It's just nothing is the standard, you know, by which people are taught. But he's made
works
it work
for him.
But the thing is, he's been around for a while. I mean, he was pretty good a few years ago, but it seems like he's really on the downslide, but apparently not, because he's found a new life with the Texas Rangers as a DH.
He was an all-star with the old Astros team, back when they're in the red and black team, before they switched back to the, well, not back to, before they switched to the American League and changed the color scheme. He was a star, all-star with that team. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah, I know. So,
and he's still kicking the tires. In the National League, Wilson Contreras from the Cubs, a catcher, Freddie Freeman, first base from the Braves, very underrated. Ketel Marte, the second baseman from the Diamondbacks. Javier Baez, of course, from the Cubs. Nolan Arenado at third base in the Rockies. Christian Yelich, Cody Bellinger, and Ronald Acuna all in the outfield.
Was it yesterday or Wednesday? Wednesday, you and I and Paul sat in here and made our predictions. And from the National League, we pretty much hit that one. I think we got them all pretty much right.
Yeah.
If I remember right, there's only a couple we might have got off. The one I think is the really coolest of all is the Ketel Marte, because I know a lot about him because of fantasy baseball and because I happen to have him on my team. I wouldn't know anything about this guy otherwise, so I pay attention to him. And here's a guy nobody's ever heard of, but he's well-deserving of being the all-star at second base. It came down to him and Mike Moustakas, and you know, I could put on my Brewer glasses. And Ozzie Albies, but Marte has just had a great season, and it's kind of nice that the fans recognize that. A great half season, so they recognize that. So congratulations to him. Two Cubs, as you said, Contreras and Baez, very well deserving and should be there. And Christian Yelich was a no-brainer out in the outfield as far as Brewers are concerned.
29 home runs.
Yep.
That's crazy.
I watched the game yesterday, and they made mention. Yesterday, of course, the official halfway point, the Brewers have played 81 games. Last year, at this point, he had 11. So he's got 29 right now. So we'll see if he can maintain that pace in the second half. But he's exceeded what he did last year when he was an MVP. The issue is hit right now is that Cody Bellinger is probably just as good, if not better. He's having as good a season as or better than Yelich. So it's going to be a great MVP race, and it's only half the season.
Right.
I mean, certainly guys like Baez could still be in it and catch up to him, and a couple other guys, too, as well. So it'll be fun to see. Arenado's having a great season, too, that people probably don't know much about.
It was crazy that no one's talking about the rookie, Peter Alonso, the first base from the Mets.
Yeah,
28 home runs, over 60 RBIs, over 40 or 50 runs scored. I mean, no one's talking about him.
If he was, he'll make the All-Star game. I was curious if he was on the original ballot. I didn't look at the original ballot.
I don't think he was.
That's set before the season, and if they weren't sure he's going to play, I think they have to bring in, every team brings in, here's your start at each position. He probably wasn't listed as starting first base, so he almost had to make it as a write-in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there was opportunities to write in on the ballots, because I did vote for the All-Star game, and I don't remember there was an opportunity to do write-ins.
I don't think there was.
So here's a guy that definitely deserves to be out there. I mean, you can argue between him and Freeman. I'd probably say Alonso does. But he'll get many all-star opportunities up to this year. And he's going to be in the team. He'll be named as an all-star.
Oh, no question.
So it's not like he's going to be totally left out.
Freeman might be the most underrated player in the game, though. No one ever talks about him. He's consistent every year.
I was going to say, consistency with him year in and year out for the last 3-4 years at least. It's consistently growing and getting better.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's kind of funny because, I mean, Braves aren't one of those anonymous teams. I know they're not one of the big name teams and all that stuff, but I mean, if Ketel Marte can get recognized and noticed for the Arizona Diamondbacks, and right. Granted, in this case, Freeman did, but I mean, I still think that people do underestimate his talents and what he can do at first base.
Right. The Cubs yesterday split the series with the Braves after taking the win 9-7 over the Cubbies. Kyle Schwarber led off the game with a home run straight to right field. Freddie Freeman also had a home run in that game as well. Caratini, Ozzy Albies, with all the four guys who hit a home run.
The great thing about two great headlines out of this game. Number one is the fact that the Cubs came back from a 6-1 deficit. I believe it was their biggest comeback of this year. I don't know how far it goes back. I'm sure it's not the best one in their history, but still down 6-1. And I was kind of paying attention. It was a day game. I was paying attention and I thought, okay, they're dead. They're going to drop 3 or 4 of the Braves. And at that point, I'm watching my Brewers play at the same time and they had a lead. I thought, oh, we might gain some ground here. And then boom, boom, boom. They had 3 in the 4th, 4 in the 5th, and 1 in the 6th and pretty much put the game away, but he got it close. And it just the script was written perfectly as far as being a close game because you didn't want to blow it out because fans really wanted to see the debut of Craig Kimbrel.
Craig Kimbrel.
And so it was his first day eligible, his first day up. He just got called up that morning. He was there at Wrigley. And I was flipped over to watch some of the game at that point. And it was kind of neat because when they cut to the camera, because you can't see the bullpen at Wrigley from the stands, but they cut the camera shot of him in there warming up and the place erupted.
Yeah,
and then of course when he came out, the place erupted, and he does a Guns N' Roses song, right? When he comes
out, yeah, I wish I could tell you the name of it, but I don't remember.
I mean, it's reminiscent of Trevor Hoffman with Hell's Bells from AC/DC. But so it's just kind of the drama, the whole situation was just set up perfectly for him. Comes out, he gets a strikeout, they go nuts. He gets a second strikeout, but that second strikeout on McCann, strike three was outside. Yeah. I think he got a generous call.
He got a
call,
good call.
But he got a good call. Then he proceeded to put the next two guys on base. And then there was a hard hit ball to Rizzo at first base.
How about that play?
It wasn't a hard play to scoop it, but he looks up to throw it. Kimbrel forgot to cover first. So now Rizzo has to race to the bag. He doesn't win that race. It's bases loaded with two outs. And the tying runs at second base. Go ahead runs at first. And he makes that sliding dive head first and tags the bag just ahead. To get the out. So you look at that, what Kimbrel did, he came in and he got the first out, probably got a gift out, put two men on, and then forgot to cover first. And I know people are going to look at this going, okay, bad decision, bad choice to get Kimbrel because, look, I mean, the whole issue was last year he closed out, he did not pitch well in the playoffs, which pitched well in the World Series. And in fact, the last save, they got one to Chris Sale, not to him because he was doing so poorly. He hung out there for a long time at free agency, and then now finally the Cubs get him. He makes his debut. And in that game, if it's in a silo, if it's in a vacuum, you go, oh, my God, it's the same old guy. I don't believe that.
Nah.
It's the first game back. He hasn't pitched in 8 months. I totally have no problem. And the adrenaline, his pitches that were off when he walked the batters were high. I've always heard that generally when you start overthrowing, you're kind of pumped up, things will soar on you. So I could see that might just be the excitement, the adrenaline. He's a new team, a new situation. The place is packed. They're screaming.
Staying ovation.
He's staying ovation, all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, he's been around for how many years? He's been through this a lot. But it's still your human being. It's your first time with a new team in a new situation, new environment. And also you kind of got to prove yourself, too. I got to go out there and prove that all those people that blew me off in the offseason as far as signing me as a free agent or let me sit until June 1st of this year, I'm going to prove to you that you all screwed up. I was ready to go, and I'm going to be the man. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. You take the save, but you discredit the circumstance in my book for that first outing. Now, if he does it again his next two outings, then you start to go, okay, maybe it was a bad investment. But right now, I don't judge the investment on one game.
Well, of course not. I don't think it means anything. Yeah. You know, it's the one. I think the only thing you can take from it is, okay, he can still throw as hard as ever.
Yeah.
And everything else, but that, you know, I think the main worry is the control, and you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, you think, okay, good. It was an okay debut, but it means nothing other than the fact that, okay, you know, if he had come in and not had his velocity, I'd be worried. But this showed you everything you can be hopeful about and some of the reasons why he was on the shelf as long as he was. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, again, there's so much more explainable to not have his control in this game than it would be, say, a month from now.
Exactly.
Yeah, his first start, you know, I was just trying to kick the tires again, kind of, you know, shake the rust off a little bit, yeah. You know.
My question, did you watch the game, Jordan?
I watched the end of it.
Okay. How many innings?
Just like literally the last inning. Oh, okay. Once I saw Kimbrough's coming in.
Well, then you missed the highlight. To me, the high point of the game was not the home runs, was not the rally, it was not the Craig Kimbrough entrance and save.
It was the Cookie Monster.
Cookie Monster saying the seventh inning stretch.
Yeah, that thing went viral.
I know, that went nuts. And there he's up there in at some point was
C is for Cubbies.
Yeah, C is for Cubbies and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it was kind of a nice.
It was a clever.
It was pretty cool.
Maybe the Brewers should come out with some pretty cool ideas.
Bill Murray singing it for
him. It was still pretty cool.
He got
Cookie Monster, and then he was supposed to join the guys in the booth, but apparently didn't. I don't know what the deal was there in the TV booth. I was hoping to have some commentary from Cookie Monster, but they didn't have it.
The Brewers avoid the sweep to the Mariners yesterday with a 4-2 win thanks to Arcia's 3-run home run, but the news does not stop there with the Brewers. Keston Hiura is coming back up to the big leagues. Travis Shaw is going down. Also, Hernan Perez looks like he might be going down too.
Aaron, here's a couple things, though. First, let's start with the win. I almost guaranteed you they were going to win because they've become right now the masters of dropping the first two of every series and always winning the third one, which is not the right way to go here, especially at home. But they've done, I think, the last three or four series have dropped the first two and won the third, dropped the first two, won the third, and here it came again. I was pretty confident they were going to win yesterday, and they did. Afterwards, you mentioned that Keston Hiura finally is coming up. Travis Shaw getting sent down to AAA. And people kept saying, what's the matter? They kept saying, we want to give these guys time to prove themselves. We want to give them time to get back in their groove because Travis Shaw has done this in the past. He's hit 30 home runs these two straight seasons, if not three. Same thing with Jesus Aguilar, for that matter. He was an all-star last year in the home run derby. So you can't just dump him after one or two bad months. That's their mentality. Then the question kept being asked, well, how long can you wait before you have to do something? How much can you keep, cruising along with an opportunity to take over first and even break away and get a big lead in this division? Well, the magic number is 81. They gave him exactly half the season to get his act together. Still hasn't gotten it together. He's hitting, I think Shaw was like 6 for his last 42.
That was Fred Van Vliet's slump. 6 for 42 shooting.
Was it really?
Yeah, the playoffs.
Well, see, now if the Brewers had Fred, they would have sent him down.
because they shouldn't have then, because then Fred, maybe he was going to get ready to turn into a star, because Fred went from that was the coldest I've ever seen anybody shoot to... From that point on, he was Toronto's second best player.
He was. Well, I'll tell you what, then Travis Shaw had a baby, too. I think that was the other thing, too. Fred did. Well, but Shaw goes down. Finally, thank God, let's bring him here up. The thing that surprised me, they're bringing up, Tyler Saladino. Yeah. And they designated Hernan Perez for assignment, which basically is right now, they're dumping him. Now, if nobody wants to pick up his contract, because they have to pay, if you want him, you can get him, but you have to pay the rest of his contract. If you don't, you wait a certain period, how many days it is, and then he becomes a true free agent. And then he can go anywhere he wants, or they can bring him back, send him down to AAA, and he can stay in the Brewer family. I've always liked Hernan. He's been great. He can do everything. He's fun to watch. He's pitched a couple times in blowouts.
He's a good bull.
He's played every position except catcher. Yeah. And he's been reliable since, I think they got him from the Tigers back in 2015. But this year, he's just really been bad.
He's a great backup, though. I mean, he can play anywhere.
But he can't hit.
That's why I'm just confused, I guess.
Yeah, he just can't hit this year for some reason. And so they're going to try to get more bats in their lineup. And I agree with this, because when they go against the lefty, he automatically has to become your second baseman, because the only right-hander can play second. So all of a sudden, when you're in that situation, you've got Jesus Aguilar in the lineup because he's right-handed. You've got Hernan, he's right-handed. And all of a sudden, and then you put those two with a sometimes slumping Orlando Arcia, and then you put him up with the pitcher. That's four spots, 6, 7, 8, 9, at the end of your batting order. They're all pretty crappy hitters.
Right.
And you're giving up a lot there. So by making this change, I hope they can turn things around. Eventually the change becomes when they put Heston at second base. Now that's a much better hitter. And then the next question is going to fix your problems at first base.
See, I mean, I guess I'm with you. I mean, you brought up Aguilar. I mean, I'm surprised they didn't send him down. I mean, he had one good season. Travis Strauss had multiple good seasons. And he's also been injured this year. Sure, he's batting like 160, 170. I get it. Aguilar's not much better than that. He's batting around 200. So I mean, I'm just kind of confused on why they sent Travis Shaw down instead of giving him a little bit more time to kind of get the flow of things going.
Well, they couldn't send. First of all, they can't send Jesus down for one very big reason, is that he has no more options. So he can't go down. Your options are to cut him or trade him or send him on the bench. Secondly, Brewers have so many lefties out there in that roster, in that lineup, that sending Jesus down pretty much means that Eric Thames is a full-time first baseman. He's left-handed. He's having a good year.
Or Moustakas.
Well, yeah, Moustakas can hit can hit lefties pretty good. He and Yelich are two lefties that can hit lefties. But you can have a lot of full lefties for the most part. A lot of them can't hit lefties. Ben Gamel has a hard time with them, and certainly Eric Thames. So, yeah, they have to find a way. They have to keep Hastings up there, get a couple home runs, and then trade his butt. That's what they got to do.
Hey, you know, there is a first baseman available, and the White Sox did not play yesterday, but they're still in the headlines because they have designated first baseman Yonder Alonso for assignment.
There you go.
So he could be available for the Brewers if they want a first baseman.
Well, can they still get Manny Machado too then?
Possibly. You never know.
If they sign him and they get Manny, if they can sign him and get Manny also, then I think it's a good move.
Maybe John Jay too?
Yeah, might as well. Might as well.
So no, that's a no to Yonder Alonso.
I think it's a big no to Yonder Alonso.
Giancarlo Stanton is likely out until August. The guy cannot stay healthy. Really, the Yankees just cannot stay healthy, and yet they're still winning.
It hasn't hurt him one bit.
And we haven't talked about this, though, but they're playing in London this weekend.
Right.
Playing against the Red Sox. So big series, of course, always Red Sox and Yankees when they meet each other. But it's not in New York. It's not in Boston. It's actually over the pond in London.
Yeah. I don't know what the normal – I saw something where the center field is 398 in the stadium they're at or something like that. Maybe it's down the line.
No way. 398?
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a poke to get it out of there. Huh. I'm surprised that they sent the Yankees and Astros. The first – or sent Yankees and Red Sox. It makes sense because those are the two biggest franchises next to maybe the Dodgers and the Cubs in baseball. And also it's that great rivalry that you take it over so that London can see our great rivalry. Mm-hmm. I get that. But I'm surprised because those are two franchises, you know, because when NFL sends teams overseas to play in London, it's dog teams because the people back here don't want to give up a home series, give up the money they make. Now, I don't know how much money they're getting from this series over from London if they get what percentage of the cut they get on concessions and parking and tickets or whatever for whoever's supposed to be the home team in this particular series. But, you know, the Red Sox and Yankees, that's going to fill up to the brim either one of those stadiums for that rivalry. Now you pick it up, you take it out of our country. I was just surprised they took the Yankees and Sox and not did something like Marlins and Rays or something like that.
Well, they want something that will draw attention. Who's going to get excited for a Marlins Rays game?
Well, but
you know?
If you're in England, maybe you're just excited to have American baseball, so you really don't care who it is because that's how the NFL's doing it. Who gets excited about the Jacksonville Jaguars and Tennessee Titans?
Hey, man.
I'm sorry.
Why are you bringing my Jaguars into this? But, no, like, when they first started that London series, didn't they always have a big-time matchup, though?
Talking about the NFL?
Yeah. Like, when they first started years ago.
Maybe they did.
They had two big teams. Or, like, when they started in Mexico this past year, it was supposed to be Rams and Chiefs. Remember, it got switched out to L.A. after that because of the whole field issue? So, I mean, they're scheduling big-time games out of the country, so they want to start with the Red Sox Yankees, the biggest rivalry, and the next year he's already confirmed Cardinals Cubs.
But Rams Chiefs is supposed to be a Rams home game, and Rams don't draw flies, so that's like another issue there. I mean, this year's the first year ever the Bears are going to be playing overseas, because it's hard for the. And I think that the Bears would have been the away team, and I can't remember who they're playing now in that game in London.
The Raiders?
It could be.
That sounds like the Raiders.
I'm not sure, but either way, that if the Bears, I think the Bears wouldn't have agreed to it if that would have been their home game. Because, again, the Packers have never played over there, and that was a big issue about because, you know, how much money are we going to lose by leaving because we filled this place up. We make a lot of money. And, of course, the NFL, it's only 8 home games. You can give up one of those. So, but I get the Rams going over or the Atlanta Falcons going over, something like that, because they don't draw flies in those places.
Well, the point is you want the big teams because you want the most talent there so you can showcase your sport. You're on the biggest stage over there. You know, it's soccer over there.
That makes sense. In the discussion here, but also it doesn't make sense financially. And it comes down, it's all about money. So they're still going to do what's best by the teams here financially, I think. So,
are you going to watch the series?
The Yankee Sox?
Yeah.
I might tune in. I would tune in just to see the stadium. I want to see what kind of crowd they're going to have.
It's a soccer stadium. You know, it took them, I think it was over 30 days or something like that to switch.
Yeah, I'm interested because I remember at the beginning of the year, I've watched a couple of times when they played in Japan, you know, the season opening one. And see the stadiums in Japan. Of course, Japan has baseball already. But see the not only just the stadium, how it sounds, how fans react, you know, and different things like that. Do they boo or what's the tradition in different places? And, you know, do they clap? Do they boo? Standing ovation? All that kind of stuff. So I'm interested in seeing some of that stuff. But as far as the game's concerned, I don't care.
So there's some basketball news. I mean, mostly rumors. Did you want to go over that? Or
let's run through really quickly so we can cut and get to our first talk.
Well, I'll start with the Lakers because I know you like to talk LeBron every chance we get.
LeBron's got a number.
Yeah. It looks like he will be giving up the number 23 jersey to Anthony Davis. There's also rumors, Kyle Kuzma started the rumor that there could be the headband could be coming back. Remember those Miami Heat days, the headband, number 6?
Yep.
That could be making a comeback in L.A. with the number 6 jersey. We'll see. Also, the Lakers made a trade yesterday, trading a couple of bench players to free up some money. Anthony Davis waived his $4 million trade clause, therefore, so the Lakers can save money, and now they can afford another max deal in free agency, either Kawhi Leonard they're making a run at, or Kyrie Irving as well has been rumored.
That actually, that trade has became an extension of the original Anthony Davis trade.
Yeah,
they just added a third team to it to make, in essence, a three-way trade, and that's the Washington Wizards. So they free up the money. They got rid of their junk. They've got a ton of money. They can get a, like you said,
Or they can sign a
max contract. A max contract. They could get Kawhi. And if they get Kawhi, then I don't watch NBA next year because that thing's over.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we said that when the Warriors got Boogie Cousins.
Yeah.
You know, and
But they would have had everybody gotten hurt.
Yeah, he was injured.
But Cousins wouldn't have helped him. I mean, Cousins never really did help him much the whole year. A, I don't know how well he fit. Yeah. B, he was never really healthy. But the thing that gets me is, because I think LeBron has a fairly strong argument for the greatest player ever. I mean, I'd still vote Jordan, but, mm-hmm. you know, LeBron's close, and he's getting close to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, you sit there and you wonder, too, about what, you know, if LeBron is this really great player. Well, when he first goes to Miami, he goes there only when they get, you know, two other all-NBA players, Wade. Pretty much. Yeah. Well, and then when he goes back to Cleveland, he doesn't go back there, you know, it's already kind of set that they're going to make a big trade for Kevin Love, who was, mm-hmm. you know, one of the top 15 players in the NBA. And now he goes to L.A., he's there for 1 year, misses the playoffs.
Right.
And now, again, they're bringing in, you know, probably one of the five best players in the NBA, or at least he was, you know, and Davis. And now they're making room to get other guys. It's like, okay, if you're this great, if you're so great, why do you have to keep bringing in so many other great players?
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say this about Kawhi. I mean, he went to Toronto, and he got traded. You know, it's not like he chose Toronto. But Toronto's got no other all-NBA players around Kawhi.
No.
And so I kind of wonder a little bit about LeBron. I mean, it seems like, you know, the team's got to – and as much grief as Durant took for hopping onto the bandwagon of the champions – and they weren't the champions that year, but they won 73 games and were the champions the year before – I think he went there not just to chase a ring. He went there because, you know, they wooed him, and he was so happy there for at least a couple of years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's they've been the happiest NBA team until this year. I mean, not only the best, but they've been the happiest. But, you know, LeBron, it just seems like you got to surround him with an NBA All-Star team all the time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I've said this before, the guys that say when they play lip service to chasing a ring, well, if they legitimately do this by going to a team and to get a ring, then it's hard for me to complain about these super teams. But it's so frustrating to see this happen. I don't know if it would, for me, it would taint a little bit my thoughts on when you put these guys on the pantheons of all-time greats. If LeBron can only, you know, he can't make the playoffs, but then he can, I'm talking in terms of if Kawhi goes there. If Kawhi goes there and they win one, yeah, they'll dominate as long as they stay healthy. But I don't know how much I feel about LeBron anymore. He's got another title. Yeah, but look how he got it. And by the same token, Kawhi, because Kawhi's proven he can win. I think it'll mean a lot to Kawhi's legacy if he goes to the Clippers and saves that moribund franchise and turns them around. Because then all of a sudden he's done it to two teams. That says a lot to me about what a great all-time player is. Now, I'm not saying he's not a great all-time player by going to Lakers, but I'm less impressed. I'm going to go, okay, you got another title.
Yeah, I mean, with Kawhi, I'm like with Fred VanVleet. I thought it was one of the great quotes he said is that, you know what, and it's what I was talking to you guys earlier in this story. You know, Fred was saying Kawhi has earned whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, well,
he came here to the title, and he can go anywhere he wants. And the fans in Toronto are going to be happy for him because he did what he wanted here. And the same thing is no one can, after taking Toronto to the title, and he was the best player, MVP that year for the Spurs when they won the title, and they weren't grabbing a super team around him. I mean, they had obviously a great team even before he got there, but no, I wouldn't. You know, I would not think less of him. Of course, it's more impressive if you go somewhere to, like, say, the Clippers, who never won anything and win. But, you know, if he wins again at L.A., that's definitely adding to his legacy, even if it's the Lakers. If he goes to the Clippers, it adds more, but still.
That's what I'm saying.
And the one thing I will say about the, A, it's not lip service. People are obviously chasing a ring sometimes when they join a great team. Right. But the thing about the NBA is, and it's been this way since the Jordan years. I mean, Jordan was such close friends with Magic Johnson and especially Charles Barkley. And now there's more, you know, freedom with the free agency even than them back then. And so some of it is that players are playing with their friends.
Yeah.
And so it goes two ways. It's A, you're chasing a ring, and B, I just want to play with my buddy again.
Yeah. You know. Well, and again, I'm not begrudging what he does. He has earned it. He can go up there. He can win a title. I'm just saying that if he goes to like a Clippers and they win a title next year, I start talking to him in a conversation of one of the three or four greatest players of all time. If goes to the Lakers and wins a title, I'm not in such a big hurry to do that because I think at that stage, I'm not saying anybody can win a title with the Lakers, but I mean, it's just less cachet with me, I guess.
Of course, because right now, if I looked at who he is and what he's done, I wouldn't put him top 20 of all time. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's not dissing him, but the top 20 is all time great. Like Charles Barkley is a better player to me than Kawhi Leonard. But if Kawhi Leonard goes to a third team that's not already a great team mm-hmm. and wins the title, yeah, he's top 10.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden I start talking about, you know, he is better than Jabbar. I mean, Jabbar won a title in Milwaukee without whatever.
He had old Oscar Robertson. That's pretty much the big name brand on that team.
But then he goes to the L.A., and he's with L.A. for, what, 5-6 years with some pretty decent players. But he doesn't win anything until Magic Johnson. His next title is with Jabbar sitting home with a headache, and Magic comes in and plays center better than he's ever played for the Lakers. Yeah. I mean, literally, what do you have, 40-some points and 15 rebounds, and I don't know how, a triple-double at center? Yeah. And it's like, okay, as great, and he played, what, 10, 15 years in L.A.?
Yeah.
And Magic showed me in one game, Magic was, as a rookie, was a better center than Jabbar ever was in L.A.
Yeah.
And I'm not taking anything away from Jabbar because he was an all-star center probably 10 of those 15 years. But he did not carry the Lakers to any of those titles.
Overrated.
He was the second. He was the second best player on all the Lakers championship
teams. He was. I agree with that. Yes. Yes. All right, George, just for that, I'm going to cut you off right now.
That's it.
It's a reminder, though, that we'll talk a little more NBA at the end of the show with Cody Grant. But, free agency opens up this Sunday, I think at 3 o'clock. So, and then the names are going to start falling. We'll probably hear a lot of rumors on Saturday and things that are kind of behind the door, hush-hush, have signed. But they lost.
Quiet of the Bulls.
I don't think that's going to happen. But and Kawhi did say that he's out in L.A., I think, right now. He's talking with the Clippers, the Lakers. I don't know if it's a third team. And then, of course, the Raptors. He said the Raptors will have the last interview, or what you want to call it, the last chance to convince him to stay. So it'll be interesting to see what his decision is. And I'm curious how quickly he'll make that decision. If he'll do it immediately on Monday or if he's going to sit and stew on it a little bit. So we'll find out. There'll be a lot to talk about, certainly by Monday. So we'll take a little break. When we come back, Matt and I are going to be talking some Fred Van Vliet with the big celebration coming up tomorrow. So stick around. You're listening to Randy and Company here on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Fred is finally going to be honored here in Rockford. He finally found some free time from all of the things he's had to do that have come associated with being a world champion. Fred Van Vliet Day is tomorrow, hosted by the City of Rockford and the RACVB, the Convention and Visitors Bureau. It's going to go on tomorrow, downtown Rockford. Just a couple of things to let you know. Starting out at the City Hall, there'll be I love this idea, Dribble the City. Basically, fans can show up, bring a basketball, and basically dribbling down State Street from City Hall to the City Market area, which is where the celebration is going to take place. That begins at 1:30, and then the ceremony will be about 1:50, so about 20 minutes they're going to be able to walk.
Remember when they had the Gus Macker, and I dribbled down took my basketball, and I dribbled down across the bridge, and I took a couple shots, and oops, I missed it, and it was floating in the river. You guys love that.
Oh, we love that story. Well, the best part of it is Bill Wilmington told that story because he looked out the window of the Register Star, and there was you alone on a bridge looking over the edge as your ball floated down the Rock River. I can picture just a little kid who just got his toy stolen from him. But, so we're dribbling down State Street, and that'll be the big celebration. They're going to have the pop-up Fred Van Vliet store down there as well. There's going to be areas for kids. They're going to set hoops up, I guess, for people to shoot around, if it's just for kids or anybody. And there's a big celebration with local dignitaries, apparently some surprise people. I don't know who that necessarily going to be. And, of course, Fred's going to address the community. And that place, barring a pouring rainstorm, is going to be packed. I think that the way the city filled up downtown for the watch parties, basically, on those last two games. I think it's going to be even bigger than that come tomorrow. So looking forward to it. It's going to be a really cool thing. And with that, Matt, you guys at the Register Star, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you did a really cool story today that's basically just kind of recapped Fred through, and I guess that's through the eyes of the Register Star, the way it covered him throughout the year. So I just want to talk a little bit about that that story.
Yeah, it was kind of fun. I mean, I went and I looked, and there was literally hundreds of mentions of him in our paper over the years. And what I kind of got a little bit of a kick out of is this. The first mention was when they won a youth basketball league title. But the second mention was when he was as a football.
I saw that.
In a junior tackle game, they made a title game, and his team lost. But Fred scored the only touchdown for the Nelson Storm back in 2005.
I was reading that. I thought that was the coolest thing, is that, you know, he wasn't just a hoops boy. He did play some football. He gave it up pretty quickly, I'm sure. But that was really – what are some of the other interesting things that you found that maybe jogged your memory, you forgot about over the course of his career that you found looking this up?
Well, the thing that I should know by now, but when I'm reading this stuff, that really opened my eyes is – and we all know how intelligent Fred is, but how great his quotes are all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sitting there and I'm going, man, that's a thoughtful quote. Man, that's good. This is good. And the other part that jumped out at me was this would have been after his super sectional loss as a junior. I mean, he shot like 3 for 17 that game or something in a bad shooting game, and I didn't put that part in here. But he had a quote talking about how he wasn't frustrated at all. It's just, hey, they played great defense. Mm-hmm. They had some tough calls by the refs. I did put that part in, that he had no problem with the refereeing. Just the way it goes. But he said the calls didn't go the way I liked or whatever. But, you know, that's basketball. Fred is so unflappable. I mean, I'm reading those quotes from his junior year in high school where kids would be crushed and most people would be complaining about the calls and this. And he sounds exactly like when he was stuck in a 6 for 42 shooting slump in the playoffs this year.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, we're getting good shots. The shots are going to fall. I'm not frustrated. You know, I believe in myself. And then he goes on a great shooting tear the rest of the playoffs and was their second best player their last 8 games of the playoffs after Kawhi Leonard. But so, I mean, that really jumped out at me is how unflappable he is.
Right.
And how smart and thoughtful of a person he is.
And he was basically mature beyond his years, what it came down to. The things that he said, did. I'm reading through these quotes in the story here and some of the things that he said that I'm going, as you said, there's kids at that age that maybe they wouldn't say bad things, they wouldn't cry or pout, but they'd probably be pretty short or quiet or, yeah, I don't know, or something like that. But he had, again, thoughtful answers to a lot of things. I loved reading the comments from people. I hate... the people that come afterwards and say, I knew he'd be great. Okay, you tell me that now. I wonder what you said back when he was young. And you go back and see things that, like, Coach Mike Miller said about him. Even things that Coach Ott said about him. And even opposing coaches when they saw him as a freshman, as a sophomore. And they could foresee, maybe not NBA greatness, but they could foresee what he's going to be and what he's going to become, what he's going to do. What was the one where his first start was a freshman? And it was because of ineligibility or something like that by another player.
Yeah.
And he stepped in and had a great game and just showed that maturity beyond his years. So that's the kind of stuff that I think is really impressive. And the times that I've talked with him, he always comes across that way. Most of the times I've talked with him now he's been an adult. So I didn't talk as much as a student, as an athlete, as you did. But it just impressed me so much. And by the way, again, if you guys have any if you got any memories of Fred you want to talk to us about or some comments, maybe you've met him, played against him. Saw him on TV, saw him at Wichita State. Give us a call at 815-874-1330. We'd love to hear some of your stories as well.
A couple of my favorite quotes from Fred is I covered the game that they beat Illinois State to go to 20-0, and they tied Larry Bird's Indiana State team as the only teams from the Missouri Valley Conference to ever start a season 20-0. And, you know, he kind of blew up a little bit his summer year before his senior year, and he could have gone to a bigger school than Wichita State at the time. But he stuck with his early commitment, and his quote was, "It makes me look like a genius with my commitment. Now I can laugh at everybody who told me I was stupid for choosing them. When guys stay loyal and do the right things in life tend to go your way." I mean,
I love
how
that.
Often do we jump at the best thing and we dump? You know,
yeah.
Remember talking to Mike McClellan, the great Freeport boxer once.
Gerald McClellan.
Gerald McClellan, thank you. Yep. And he said, talked about how, you know, he was still friends with his old friends. And people were saying, you got to get rid of those old friends and, you know, they're going to tear you down. And he said, hey, the people I walked with are the people I'm riding with, you know. And I love that, you know, Fred's quote about being loyal. I thought that was such a great quote.
I love the idea too. When he says about that, you know, you make a decision, you stick with it, you make the best of it. And I don't want to get back in that conversation again, but to me, that's why like a Kawhi Leonard going to the Clippers is a bigger deal to me than jumping onto another. Well, and I can't say the Lakers are a winning team. They haven't been, but you know, I just like that he picks a school and I don't know what his choices were when it came down to picking a college or what his other options were besides Wichita State. I mean, I'll be honest. And I can say this. So I talk about people that in hindsight talk about, I saw this coming. I did not see this coming. I didn't think I thought he'd be a decent college player, maybe a sixth man at best, and he wasn't. Not only that, but he took a team out of the national stage. And I thought, okay, that's fine, but he's not going to be in the NBA. He can't play. It's going to come down to the difference of his being able to play defense. He's not quick enough to defend NBA point guards. Totally wrong again. He's proven that. And then he goes and he makes it already in a couple of years, a finalist for the Sixth Man of the Year award, and then to the point where they win an NBA championship, and without him, they don't win it. Without him, they don't even get past the Milwaukee Bucks, in my mind. And it's interesting that, and I can't remember who it was, one of the ex-former coaches, that when at the end, when they picked the MVP, he got one vote for
Hubie Brown.
Hubie Brown was, yep, he got the MVP. He got one MVP vote for that NBA Finals series. Kawhi got all the rest, but people recognize what he'd done. Now, who, if you just talked to any of us 6, 8 years ago, would have said, this kid right here that's running around up and down Auburn's basketball court is going to get a vote for the NBA Finals MVP. I mean, I don't. Anyway, it says that they saw that coming, liars.
Yeah. Well, I thought when he went to Wichita State, I thought he could do what he did there. You know, I mean, he's scored 12, 13 points and about 5 assists and very, very few turnovers. I did not think someone with those stats would get as much acclaim as he got. Mm-hmm. But I also, no one could have seen the fact that Wichita State was going to have a 4-year run that was amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and so I didn't realize that he could have the impact on the rest of the team in college the way he did in high school. Mm-hmm. He made everybody around him so much better in Auburn, and so he did that. And then I thought he could make it in the NBA. I never thought he could be a key factor, you know, one of the top 3 or 4 players on an NBA championship team. No, I did not see that.
Right.
So he has surpassed what I thought, but I did have awful high expectations for him. I thought of all our kids that have gone to college and stuff. And we'd heard about him in 9th grade, you know,
and
before he even really got to high school. I think the only 2 players that I can remember hearing about before they started high school, since I've been here, would have been Fred VanVleet and Devin Bowinkle?
Yes, Devin Bowinkle. Oh, down Winnebago, yeah.
Winnebago. Those are the only 2. So, you know, I did think he could go that far, but no, still I didn't think he'd be as good as he is.
And the thing, too, about him is the way he's improved his game. When we did see him, he was a great defensive player. He's a smart player, a very good point guard. But as you point near, at one point, he became the number 1 scorer for Rockford Public Schools in all-time history. And I think there's a quote there, I can't remember if it's from him or from Brian Ott, that said something about how interesting because he's a pass-first guy.
Well, Fred called it funny.
Yeah, yeah.
And Brian Ott called it ironic.
Yeah.
And then I later had a story, this was from his junior year in college, about how he stepped up his scoring. And Fred talked about how he's just not a natural shooter. Mm-hmm. And Coach Greg Marshall said the same thing. But they also said if you work at it hard enough, you can make it. And now look at Fred. Yeah. If Fred is not Fred in the NBA, if he can't shoot threes.
Right.
I mean not just shoot threes, but be a very good three-point shooter, because they have to come out to guard him all the way out, mm-hmm, for him to be able to penetrate in and get everybody else all those easy looks.
Yeah.
And, yeah, one thing I didn't write about in this story here is, maybe that's a story I should do sometime, is Fred, to me, is the best passer I've ever seen who doesn't make fancy passes.
That's a good point. There's no behind-the-back, between-the-legs stuff.
No, the only other one I would throw up there at his level might be Larry Bird.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody would rave about Magic Johnson's no-look passes and stuff. Larry Bird was so good at finding people. But Fred, same way as Larry Bird did it, does not go for style points ever.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He just gets the ball to the... And another thing that he does, and I did not put it in here again, there's a quote about it, and there's a Wichita State game where they made like 4 passes to get a great basket. And the coach was saying that was the play of the game, that was perfect. And Fred talked about it. Goes, oh, yeah, actually, so-and-so made the best pass. He gave it to me, and then I gave it to so-and-so, and I got the assist. But he had the best pass going in it. But the whole point is that, he just does everything the right way.
Right.
You know, if you're a coach and you wanted to have someone, you don't necessarily want to drop the Jason Williams in the old days or Pete Maravich, somebody doing the dipsy do and all that stuff. Is like, if you want a guy just to make the right play at the right time, you go, this is the player you watch.
I'm curious what he would be if he were 3 inches taller, 4 inches taller, and maybe a tick or 2 faster, where he'd be in the NBA right now in terms of ranking. Because he's made the most of what God gave him there, and it's just a joy to watch him. And the biggest thing, again, and we'll cut off here, but the biggest thing, too, beyond all this is the fact, I think what makes him so well-loved in his community is because he loves his community. He's coming back. He's got the store. He donates to basketball programs. He donates uniforms. He donates basketballs.
Well, it's not just that he loves the community. And they had quotes in here about that, too. He wants to help his community.
Yes.
He gives so much for it. He comes in. He wants to change Rockford. He doesn't look at Rockford with star-studded eyes.
No.
He sees the good and the bad, but he wants to make the bad good.
Right, exactly. And that is so so amazing. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that's where you wish all of your people that came out of this area, any community they come out of, that turn around and come back and use their power, use their fame, use their money, whatever it may be, to help wherever they came from, help go, you know, pay it back, I guess, in other words. And Fred certainly does that as well. So, again, the big celebration is tomorrow. Starts at 1:30 at the City Hall. Bring a basketball, dribble around down, and then you got the big celebration, the big festivities, and it's going to be a lot of fun downtown Rockford. We're going to take a real quick break here, and we'll come back and wrap up the first hour with Throwback. You're listening to Randy and Company on Sports Fan Radio 1330. We are looking at June 28th on this date. 1919, Carl Mazes pitched a complete game doubleheader against the New York Yankees. Pitched a full 18 innings in one day. We talk about pitch counts these days. In 1957, the Cincinnati Enquirer was guilty of stuffing ballot boxes, doing a lot of underhanded things to get the Reds into the All-Star game. They ended up getting 8 of 9 starters from the Cincinnati Reds. Commissioner Ford Frick said, uh-uh. And he put Willie Mays and Hank Aaron on those teams, and to kind of at least make it a little bit more, obtainable, I guess. And then also managers and players and coaches picked the teams until the fan voting rights were restored in 1970. They took away the fan voting rights right after that one. 1993, Carlton Fisk at age 45 was released by the White Sox as the all-time leader of most games caught and most home runs by a catcher. And really quickly, happy birthdays go out to Al Downing. 78 years old, Al Downing gave up Hank Aaron's, I believe it was the game, the home run that surpassed Babe Ruth. Don Baylor, 70 years old, and John Elway, 59.
You missed one, Randy.
Oh, yeah?
I did my research today.
Okay,
this
good.
Day in history, 15 years ago, the Vikings officially signed Brock Lesnar.
Oh, that's right, the wrestler. I forgot about
15
that.
Years ago, 15 years ago today.
All right. Well, that's all we have for that. We'll come back. We're going to talk some golf now with Ann Bloomfield, the Rockford Park District. So stick around. It's Randy and Company, Sports Fan Radio 1330.
Rockford, it's for you, baby.
Halftime is over.
Chili's starting to back up on me a little bit.
We've made the adjustments.
What's that? I'm sorry.
I love the balls.
Oh, wow.
We've inspired the team.
Welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause.
Now, let's get back to the action.
He's a prediction guy.
Mr. Randy! Yes!
On Sports Fan Radio 1330.
Oh, yeah. Go Tigers. And we're back to Randy Company on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. We have 1 hour in the book. We have one more to go. We got three great guests coming up now. And leading it all off, we're going to talk a little golf here. Joining us on the phone, good friend of the show, she's Ann Bloomfield, the Director of Golf Services for the Rockford Park District. Kind of give us a little bit of update on what's going on in Rockford Golf in terms of there's a lot of cool things coming up in terms of play days, lessons, family fun days, things like that. So I want to hear what's going on from Ann. How you doing this morning, Ann?
Doing well. Thanks so much for having me.
Sure. Appreciate it. Well, kind of give us a quick overview. What's some of the big things you've got coming up that are going on in the next couple of weeks, next couple of months here when it comes to Park District Golf?
Awesome. Yeah, we have this Saturday, we have our Cigars and Brews event. It was originally slated for Sandy Hollow, but we had to move it to Elliott. But definitely day by day getting more participants in. I think we're up to 59 now, so kind of what's going to happen there. They go out on the course, have some beer samples, get some cigars. It's going to be a good fun event for sure.
You going to have a lot of women out there smoking cigars too?
Pardon me?
Are you going to have a lot of women out there smoking cigars too?
You know, coming from Milwaukee, there was actually quite a crowd for ladies and cigars. But,
okay.
I'm not sure. I'm kind of hoping so. Hopefully we can break into that. But
you might have to lead the charge then, Ann.
Unless I'm on fire. But no, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. And I'm hoping we can focus on that too. Everybody, when we had the community engagement event, said they wanted more fun at the Park District courses. So that's what we're leaning on. We got about a week off here, and we have a bunch of our junior lessons. We're doing a reboot on that, so that'll be our second time launching those out. We were full the first time around, lots of kids out. We gave them hats and T-shirts the other night out at Elliott. It was awesome. They were having a good time. And, of course, popsicles. So we can't go wrong with popsicles.
Especially in this weather, you're right. And you said that you're rebooting it. So where they had like a whole set of lessons and also kind of restarted for those that missed the first time, they can then now do the lessons the second time around?
Yeah, and kind of what we did, we restructured everything this year. So before you would take a series of, you know, two lessons or five lessons, and then it would kind of be the end of the series. So now the kids can sign up. Over the winter, we redeveloped a program so they can sign up and take lessons year-round. So they have a bit of a break over the 4th of July. A lot of families travel, so we took that week off, and then they're going to jump right back into lessons. So, and I'm sure you know we have a simulator coming at the ISD
right.
And the opportunity to hit out there. So really our lessons are going to move into being year-round, and, you know, in the springtime you won't have to knock the rust off because you'll be able to play year-round. So it's going to be pretty amazing.
What are the ages for the youth programs? What age from when to when are you accepting?
Sure. We start at 3. So 3 all the way to 17. We have amazing, amazing instructors. I can't brag enough about them. Lloyd McWilliams has won junior golf awards for in the PGA. Dave Kopp, Mike Johnson, all those guys have been in the industry for a long time and just really experts on teaching. We have a new gentleman out at Elliott. His name is Lee Kanzler. He came all the way to us from Alaska. So he's doing a great job, and he's also our director of instruction. So we just put together a whole winter program for the ISD, and we'll keep going strong for the summer. So, and then Nick Hawkinson is out at, he actually manages 3 of our courses, Sandy Hollow, Ingersoll, and Mississippi. So they're busy guys, but they're great.
And the kids, of course, you said you're rebooting. So, I mean, if I hadn't been in it right now, or my son or daughter hadn't been in it, they can start at any point, correct?
That is correct. Okay. Yep, they can jump in at any time. And the kind of cool part about it is we get them in and then assess them in their levels where they should be if they're just a beginner golfer or they have a ton of experience. Like I said, we take all the way up to 17. Kind of in our industry, you find that once kids hit 15, they kind of take private lessons or do other things. So we've really, we have a Jane Lyons Elite program, which our other LPGA instructor, Jordan Zellman, leads. So she just took the girls up to Whistling Straits, and they played courses up there. And so that's geared more towards kids who are going to college and already playing high school golf, so who are pretty accomplished golfers. So we have something for everybody.
Hey, Ann, how much does it mean to the Park District that the Pro-Am this year is going to be held at Aldine on July 8th?
Oh, gosh. It's going to be incredible. And with the lineup that they're bringing in with the ladies, I would encourage everybody to come out and see them. I mean, I tell my lessons all the time. You know, you can have your fan of the PGA Tour, but the LPGA Tour is something that, you know, you can look and actually kind of learn from. The guys on tour swing so fast. So, you know, the LPGA, their short game and all that other stuff, you really can't, it's pretty unmatched. It's pretty cool. So her Julie Inkster's coming and Brittany Lincecum. So just a lot of great faces, and it'll be some good golf to watch for sure.
How fun will it be to see, you know, the pros play the public course that most of our golfers in town haven't really played the country clubs, but how cool it will be them to see a course that, you know, most of the golfers in town have actually played.
You know, I think it's going to be awesome, and how cool to come out and see how they play it as opposed to how you play it. Or where their ball lands, or, you know, if they get in trouble, how they get out of it. I think it's going to be an awesome opportunity for sure. And I'm hoping we have all of our junior golfers coming up that day to come and see what's going on and what's happening. So it's what an opportunity for them to meet them as well.
Another thing, Ann, I heard about was family golf days. Kind of explain what those are.
Sure. So we've been having a family golf days at Aldean. So we just had our first one a couple weeks ago. They're on Sundays. They run from 2 to 4:30, and it's just an opportunity for families to come out. We set up Golfzilla and just have a good time, have fun. We ran some clinics and just did some instruction, so encourage everybody to come out and give it a try. Definitely, you don't need to have your own equipment or have any golf experience. We'll take care of that when you get there. So we had some music going and just really focused on fun and an easy learning atmosphere.
And what does that cost, and how can people sign up for that?
There's no cost to it.
Okay.
So no cost to it at all. You just come out and enjoy yourself. Hopefully we're working on some Hawaiian shaved ice for next time. Just keeping it fun and keeping it light and encouraging people to come out and give the game a try.
Awesome. Yeah, I was going to ask you in general about golf. This was a really crappy spring with all the rain. How are the rounds this year? I'm sure the course are nice and green because of all the rain, but how are the rounds, and are you guys behind because of that weather, or what has that done to you guys for the summer?
Yeah, since the beginning of the year, we've had about 16 inches of rain, so it's been absolutely crazy trying to keep up, and you know, all the struggles that people have with their own yard. We face those battles too. So when you can't get your mower in somewhere, so you have a push mower or a riding mower, and with the possibility of getting it stuck or getting the deck stuck, and multiply that times two or three and wait, and that's where what we're battling with. So a lot of times when we can't allow carts out, obviously we can't get mowers out there. So it has been a battle. We have the best superintendents in the business, and they really do a heck of a job keeping up on stuff. And I know that there was hand mowing and push mowing and weed whacking going on where normally they would go in with a piece of equipment and have it done in no time. But they've done a phenomenal job keeping up with it. And like I said, it's definitely that's industry wide in our region. I was just talking to a pro from Madison the other day, and she said they're almost 35% down from where they were last year. So it's been brutal. So, but you know, the good news is it looks like we got a stretch of good weather coming here, and hopefully that'll change. And I know people are just itching to get out so bad. So on the days that we have had nice weather, the courses have been packed. So
make it up for lost time.
It'll get there. What's that?
And they're making up for lost time is what it is.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, kind of the cool part, again, having the ISD, we'll be able to have golf year-round. And so even if we have a bad spring, it won't be such a bad, hit to the budget, hit to rounds when
right.
We can do it year-round.
Right.
So that'll be amazing.
Well, reminder again, Ann, information, there's so much going on between lessons, between events, between the family golf days, the play days. Where's the best place for people to go to find out what's the latest stuff going on when golf in the Rockford Park District?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a brand new website. So if you go to golfrockford.org and check it out, it breaks it down by course and pricing, lists out all the events and all our lesson schedules. So we have two more events coming up this year. We have Nine and Wine, and then we're bringing back from the dead Night of the Living Divot. So it'll be a Halloween event and a night golf event. It's going to be super fun. I think we're going to dress some equipment up like mummies and ghosts, and it's going to be good. So keep your eye out for that for sure. All that marketing's coming.
All right, great stuff. It's Ann Bloomfield, the Director of Golf Services for the Rockford Park District, working her tail off, and her staff is working the tail off to keep golf moving along here this summer despite the bad spring of weather. Like I said, the course, we're looking out the window here at Sandy Hollow. It's just green and beautiful looking as ever. So thank you so much for your time, Ann. Again, folks, go to golfrockford.org. There's a lot of stuff they're doing. Get involved. It's a great stuff for the Rockford community. Thank you much, Ann. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me, Randy.
All right, take care. We'll take a break right now. We're going to continue the golf talk. It's about, I'm going to talk about a new event coming up in August up in Janesville, Wisconsin. It involves LPGA golfers as well. We talked a little about the Rockford Pro-Am. This is a new one. So we'll be talking with Bill Kennedy right after this. A little news and weather. We'll be back. It's Randy and Company on Sports Fan Radio 1330. Joining us right now on the phone is Bill Kennedy, who is the event chairman for an exciting new golf tournament coming north of the border in Janesville. It's the Janesville LPGA Senior Pro-Am, and it'll be taking place this August, August 3rd and 4th. And we want to bring Bill on to talk about it because like a lot of people will be willing to travel up to Janesville to see this great event. So first of all, welcome, Bill, and thanks for taking time to be with us.
Yeah, you bet.
First of all, give us kind of an overview of what this event is. You know, what all is going to happen over the course of the 2 days, the format and all that.
Well, it's a pro-am format. These are LPGA seniors, 45 years and older. We have the preliminary list includes two Hall of Famers. Pat Bradley is one of those. We have five previous major LPGA major champions. There'll be three amateurs playing with a professional for 2 days, Saturday and Sunday. They're playing for their version of the Champions Tour point system, mm-hmm. And a purse of $100,000, along with and then there'll be a separate amateur three-person event, three amateur player event that are playing for basically first, second, and third place.
And it's in a scramble format for the three people. Or best ball?
Yes, it is. Yes, okay. It is. You'll be, the format will allow you to use the professional's tee shot if you choose to. But other than that, they will be playing their own ball, and then the three amateurs will be playing in a scramble.
Where did the idea to do this come from? How did this all start?
Well, it all got started. Our club had, worked on an agreement with the LPGA last year to host an event, mm-hmm. And as things kind of morphed itself into, we thought this was the best fit for us and for them. Mike Nichols from the LPGA's side and I worked on an agreement where we thought this would be a something that would be different and exciting and would fit both their agenda and our agenda.
Sure. Now, you said Pat Bradley earlier. So who are some of the other golfers you've got lined up, professional golfers?
Jane Geddes is another player that has committed. We have some local players from Wisconsin. Hauser, who is a previous LPGA champion. The list is, we should be, we're hoping by the end of this week, tomorrow actually, to have everything finalized.
What's been the hardest part of putting something like this together, especially when it's the first year of it?
Organization, sponsorships, once we had the list of players announced, we've started to fill up the field of 30 teams very quickly. I think the anticipation we had a lot of people that were interested in being a part of this, but one of the first questions was, well, who's involved? Who's coming? And now that the commits are coming through, so are the sponsorships.
That's awesome. How many do you have signed up yet, and how much room do you still have for the amateurs?
It's been pretty fluid. I would say that right now we're at about 20 teams, so we have 10 spots available.
Okay. And how do people sign up, and what does it cost if they want to be one of the amateur teams?
The amateur teams, it's $5,000 per team. Okay. And again, it's three amateurs and one of the professionals.
Okay. So if I sign up as an individual as opposed to a team, or do you want to take them on as three-person teams?
Individuals are welcome.
Okay.
We have some of those that have signed up. The cost for an individual is $2,000.
Okay. All right. And how's the sponsorship going? I know that's always a big, important part of the whole thing to get this off the ground is having good sponsorship.
We have two title sponsors, Baird Investments and Blackhawk Community Credit Union are the lead sponsors for our event. They were quick to sign up. They were on board very early.
Mm-hmm. And are you golfing in it?
Absolutely.
All right. How good a golfer are you?
I have a single-digit handicap.
Okay, there you go. Well, you'll be able to hold your own with the lady pros then.
I hope so.
And the other last question I want to ask you is, this is taking place on Janesville Country Club, and I didn't know this, but I was reading, it's the oldest country club in the state of Wisconsin. So tell me a little bit about the country club and why this is the perfect setting for you guys for this event.
Well, we're celebrating our 125th anniversary as a golf club. It's the oldest club in the Midwest. It's the sixth oldest club in the country. It's a unique venue, not long, small greens, elevated, fast, quick. If you're going to score, you best have a pretty good short game.
Sure.
And a putter.
Okay. Well, that was Bill Kennedy, the event chairman for the Janesville LPGA Senior Pro-Am. It takes place August 3rd and 4th at the Janesville Country Club. And is there a phone number or a website people can go to get more information about this, Bill?
Yeah, there is. The phone number is area code 608-755-7777.
Okay.
And the website is JanesvilleCC.com.
All right. Great stuff. Well, thank you so much, Bill. I'm looking forward to this. It's going to be a great event. And if it's anything like, we have the Rockford Pro-Am down here, of course. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's the longest-running freestanding pro-am in the country, and they've in the past years have been getting heavier and heavier, and they're bringing in more women golfers, LPGA golfers. So kind of similar to what you're doing, although there's not relegated to the 45 and older senior bracket, but still, it's very popular down here, and I have a sense that your events will be huge up there in Janesville as well.
Well, we're looking forward to it, and we're excited.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Bill. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. Have a good day.
You too. That was Bill Kennedy. Again, that number, if you want to get interested in this to sign up, is 608-755-7777. That's easy to remember. And if you go online, it's janesvillecc.com for more information. Is the Janesville LPGA Senior Pro-Am. Sounds like a really cool event, a first-timer for the Janesville community, and hopefully it's a big success for them as well. So we're going to take a break right now. When we return, our good friend Cody Grant's going to join us from Madison, Zone Madison, and talk a little bit about the Brewers and the Bucks. We'll get into my territory. I know Jordan's going to fall asleep because he doesn't want to hear about this. But, hey, we talked enough Cubs, Jordan. But we'll take a break right now. We come back with Cody Grant. It's Randy and Company. Randy and Company on Sports Fan Radio, 1330. Just got off the phone just prior to that commercial break with Bill Kennedy, the event chair for the Janesville LPGA Senior Pro-Am going on August 3rd and 4th. They're going to bring a lot of senior LPGA golfers to golf with local amateurs. Sounds like a lot of fun. It's at the Janesville Country Club. Again, if you're interested in that, go to the janesvillecc.com, or the number is 608-755-7777. Joining us on the phone right now, a good friend of the show, he is Cody Grant. He is the man that covers the Bucks and the Brewers for Zone Madison up in Madison, Wisconsin, my old stomping grounds, and also the host of Dear Milwaukee podcast as well. And I want to get a hold of Cody to talk a little bit about the situation. We've got the Brewers situation, a lot of stuff going on with the Brewers, and potentially a lot of stuff going on with the Bucks, especially with free agency coming this weekend. So, Cody, I'm going to start Brewers right off the way, first off the bat here, and say my first reaction was, thank God they finally brought Keston Hira up. What's the reaction up there?
It's about time, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of Brewers fans, of course, been clamoring for Keston Hira. Trade Council said a few days ago the reason why Travis Shaw and Jesus Aguilar were still there was because they wanted to get them going. It's been a while, though, that they've been trying to get them going, and they just really haven't. And, you know, it was understandable because Shaw last year had a good season. Aguilar, obviously, an all-star. And when those guys are good, it makes the Brewers better. But when you have a guy like Hira, who is just a special hitter and could help your team out right now, there's no reason why he's not on the major league roster. So, I think the right decision for the Brewers, and excited moving forward for them to see Hira up there.
You know, we were talking because when they go against lefties, I mean, the lineup generally ends up being Jesus at first, Hernan Perez at second, and then, yeah, he had 3 on homer yesterday, but Orlando Arcia has not been real consistent. And then you throw in the pitchers. So your bottom four are almost 4 automatic outs there, at least the way they've been playing lately. So getting Keston in there also then helps that at that area as well. And then the next thing now is just to get Jesus going some way, somehow.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Eric Thames has been playing pretty good as well. Obviously not as good against lefties. He actually has a higher average and on-base percentage and OPS against lefties this season. Wow. That's only in 20 at-bats because it's just a small sample size. That's not going to stay consistent if he continues to play against lefties. But Thames not having a bad year. Aguilar seems to be getting a little bit better. We'll see what he can do in the second half of the season. He kind of, even last season, you know, after the All-Star break, after the home run derby, he kind of fell off a little bit. So hopefully he can get back on track. But I think the right decision to send Shaw down, he was the one that was really struggling.
Cody, one of the big weak spots right now for the Brewers have been starting pitching, and Brandon Woodruff has just been incredible this year, not only turning into an All-Star, but really a Cy Young candidate. And you look at all these other guys, what has Brandon Woodruff done differently compared to all these other young gun pitchers like Freddy Peralta? Like, what has Woodruff done differently to where he can find consistency at the major league level?
As young as Woodruff is, he seems to be the most, I don't know what the word would be for this, but a veteran-like pitcher on this team as far as he has so much poise and he has so much confidence in himself. And you're right, you know, he has been so good. When coming into the season, when they decided to go with the 3 young guys in their starting rotation, Woodruff, Burns, and Peralta, I think we all looked at Woodruff as the guy that we felt safe about. Because we saw him last year, and he pitched pretty well in the starting rotation last year. And then Burns was the guy with the highest ceiling, and we don't know what happened to him. He gave him 12 home runs in his first 3 or 4 games. And Peralta is just so inconsistent. I mean, he pitched really well the other day coming in for Adrian Hauser after he didn't only go 2 innings. Peralta came in, pitched 4 innings, had 5 strikeouts, no runs. But then he's going to have those games where he gives up 6 runs in the first inning. So Woodruff has been the most consistent starting pitcher on this roster. But you look back at the last 30-plus games, their starting rotation has an ERA over 6.5. So you're not going to win many ball games that way. And their bullpen has actually been pretty good this season, but they're starting to get taxed because they have pitched the most innings out of any team in the NL, and that's not a recipe for success. And if you continue to pitch poorly this way, I don't think they're going to be in contention at the end of the season.
What's the answer for that with the starting pitching? Because I know, I think Craig Council made the comment, basically, we've got to go with what we've got. They just have to do better. I get that. You can't trade for 4 more starters at this point. But just to expect them to get better. And the scary thing is that, actually, Zach Davies is getting worse, at least his last 2 outings. So it's really kind of scary. Do you think there's I'm sure they're looking into trades somehow. And a situation they're in where they're basically looking desperate, I'm sure other teams are holding them hostage in terms of what they want to get back in return. But what do you think the odds are of a trade, and how soon would it maybe happen to get a starting pitcher?
I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't make a trade. I don't know if it's going to be a starter, though, sometimes. It may be just another bullpen owner. They need help at starting pitching. There's no doubt about that. You mentioned Zach Davies. Davies has had a good season this year. He got off to a hot start. He won his first 7 games. His last 2 outings have not been good, and Davies came into the season as a 5th starter. He doesn't have a history of having a low ERA. He's not a power pitcher. He pitches on location, throws about 91, 92 on that fastball. But you look around the starting rotation, Yelich Cousin has had a down season. It seems like the Brewers are cursed when it comes to opening day starters.
Yes.
Those guys never come through. Jimmy Nelson, of course, was relegated to the bullpen, and he doesn't look like himself. I don't know if they can go back to him the rest of this season. Gio Gonzalez was pitching really well before he went to the IL, so he'll be back, and hopefully he can kind of revert to some of that magic that he had. But, yeah, they need help with starting pitching, and if they don't make a trade, they're going to be in trouble. And you look at the guys that they have that they can move, their bullpen's not as strong as it was. Prospects are not as strong as they were last year or 2 years ago. So they do have names down there in AAA, AA, and Single A that they can get an arm back from. But you know, we don't know who they're talking to. We don't know the calls they're making. We don't know what David Stearns has up his sleeve. He's smarter than all of us. That's why he's in the position he's in right now. And, you know, if a Brewers fan was running the organization, there'd be nobody on the team right now because everybody would have been DFA'd by now.
That's true. That's true. Well, you know, on one name I saw yesterday and it piqued my interest, it wouldn't maybe necessarily be good news for a guy like you, but apparently the Mets as players are not happy with what Jason Vargas did when he went after the news reporter. And so I'm thinking the Mets might be willing to try and get rid of Vargas. He's got good numbers. He's a veteran. I mean, that's a guy you might be able to get on the cheap. So, but then you guys have to be aware when you go in the locker room.
Yeah, I'll be careful with questions I ask Vargas if he does come over the Brewers. So.
Are you surprised that they dropped Hernan Perez? I mean, he's hitting poorly, but he's well-liked, well-loved. He's been such a soldier for this team for so many years.
Yeah, a little bit, because you talk about versatility, and that's one thing that Council loves. And same thing with Stearns. They like guys that can play multiple positions. They like guys that can be moved around a lot in the lineup. And so, yeah, it's a little bit surprising, that's for sure.
Let's jump over to the Bucks now. We've got a free agency, and then basically in Milwaukee's case, the free agency is their own, re-signing their own. What's the latest intel in terms of what you think they'll do? How many of those free agents are they going to bring back?
Well, let's start with Chris Middleton. I think that's the key. I think that's the number one priority for them right now. I think he's the second best player on this team. I've always been a component of saying that Middleton is the second most important player on the Bucks with what he does defensively, what he can do offensively, and the thing that he has done that I think is most incredible is just taking the back seat to Giannis and just doing everything he can for the better of the team. So I think that's the number one priority, is getting Middleton back. He's going to be the most money out of all the free agents that they have to worry about bringing back. So I think he's the one that you want to get done right away. You want to get done first, and then you kind of have that money in mind and you know what you can do. Brook Lopez is a guy that wants to come back. The Bucks want to bring back. They have to work out a deal with him. Obviously, it's going to be more than the $3.3 million he was making last season. But you can't go really high because the Bucks are at a point with their money that they don't have a lot of flexibility. George Hill is another guy that wants to be in Milwaukee that the Bucks, of course, would love to have back. Nikola Mirotic is someone I don't see being back with the Bucks next year. And then you look at Malcolm Brogdon, a restricted free agent. And there was some news late that the Bulls are looking at Brogdon, looking to give him a big contract. So you have to think about how much are you willing to spend on Brogdon? Are you willing to go up to $20 million? I think they would be willing to do that. But what if a team out there gives them 25 or 26? I mean, how high are you going to go? And Brogdon now, the thing with him, after that injury last year, you worry about that moving forward. You worry about his knee. You worry about, is he going to be a guy that's going to be durable for a prolonged time during his career?
Cody, when you mentioned these guys like Malcolm Brogdon, of course, the center, Brook Lopez, sorry, lost his name for a second, as well as Chris Middleton, look at all these guys that are going to be getting big contracts this offseason. With the Milwaukee being sort of a smaller market compared to these other large cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, are the Bucks at all looking ahead down the road towards a possible new contract with Giannis? Is this offseason going to at least tell anything about that, looking ahead down the road?
As far as how much money they'll be able to afford, or
yeah, are they at all looking ahead towards Giannis's big max contract, because he's going to get the biggest offer in the NBA in a couple of years? Do you think that all mm-hmm. they're going to look for that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they definitely have that in their sights. I don't think that Giannis is going to go anywhere. When you talk about those big market teams, too, you mentioned New York and Chicago. I mean, those are two of the worst-run organizations in basketball right now. You talk about the Bulls have had Gar Foreman and John Paxson the last 16 seasons, and I know Bulls fans are not happy about those two guys. And then you look over in New York, and they're just running that mecca basketball team into the ground. I mean, when's the last time those two teams made the playoffs even? So I think that in today's NBA, the big markets is not as big of a deal as it used to be. When you look at the players and what they want to win for a good organization. And Milwaukee is a first-class organization. They've proved that over the last few seasons. Yeah, Giannis will be the highest-paid player in basketball in a couple of years once his contract runs up and he gets that super max. It's going to be something crazy, like $250 million or something like that. Now, the Bucks are obviously, they can go over the cap to sign Giannis because he has bird rights. He's been there his whole career. He was drafted, but Then you talk about going into the luxury tax. Now, John Horst spoke before the draft to the media, and he talked about the ownership, the group, the Wes Edens, and Mark Lazary, and he said that if this team is on pace and they have the players, they have the talent to win a championship, luxury tax doesn't matter to them. So this ownership group has money. They do have money, and I don't think that they wouldn't be willing to go into the luxury tax if they can put the team in a position to win a championship. And the Bucks are there. They're a contender. They were the third-best team last year in terms of teams left. You know, they just got beat out by the Raptors. It was a poor way to finish the season, but they had a great year. And now you look at the Eastern Conference and you see where all the dominoes fall. It looks like Kyrie Irving's, I mean, he's out of Boston. Al Horford's not there, so Boston's going to get worse. Kawhi Leonard, does he come back to Toronto? If he doesn't, Toronto obviously gets worse. And then Philly, what happens with Jimmy Butler and Tobias Harris? If those guys aren't back, they're not going to be as good. So you look at the East right now, and it's the Bucks to win if they are able to get their guys back and some of the other guys on other teams leave.
If you're a betting man, Cody, of those free agents, who's the least likely to be retained between Lopez, Middleton, Brogdon? And if whoever you pick, who is out there that they could get to replace him?
That's an interesting question. It's a good question. Because I look at Lopez as a guy that if you're starting a team, for instance, you would say Brogdon is the better player. You'd rather want Brogdon back. But with how the money works, I'm starting to get a little bit worried about Brogdon. And Lopez can do something that no other center in the league can do. I mean, you look at his numbers last season, he was the only player in NBA history to average 2 blocks per game and to make 2 3-pointers per game. And he is just the perfect Mike Budenholzer guy in the sense of he can play great defense by clogging the lane and getting those weak side blocks, and he spaces the floor offensively. So look around the league at free agents who can replace Lopez. I mean, I don't know how many guys there are that can replace a guy like Lopez. And then Brogdon, what he can do, I mean, he was, I think, the 8th or 9th player in NBA history to do the 90-50-40, which is 90% from the foul line, 50% from the field, and 40% from three. And he's a guy that is really this 4th option on this team. When you look at the starting lineup, Giannis is your number 1, Milton is your number 2, and then Bledsoe is your number 3. And then you have Brogdon, who doesn't take a lot of notice as far as what the defense is looking at because they're so worried about those other guys, where he can get to the rim pretty much at will and, you know, hit the 3-ball. So it is really tough. It all depends on the money and how that works out. Obviously, the Bucks would love to have all these guys back, but we all know it doesn't always work the way you want it to work when guys want to get paid. And rightfully so. They should want to get paid. I mean, you have a small, short career in the NBA. I mean, we all know in life you want to get as much money as you can. So.
Yeah, the one guy I was looking at is, you're right about the irreplaceable of Brook Lopez, but I look at Dwayne Dedman, for instance, as a guy that's kind of Brook light, that you might be get cheaper if they can't keep him, or if it comes down. Because to me, I think Brogdon has to come back. I just love Malcolm Brogdon, what he does. I know they're going to make Middleton the priority. So of the three, you know, I guess if I had to make a choice, I'd say that Lopez is the least of the three. Brandon, again, like you said, he does so many things that nobody else has done between his shot blocking, his defense, and well as his three-point shooting. But we'll have to see. One last question. How quickly do you think this will all kind of shake out? I mean, will a lot of be settled by Sunday, Monday, or is this going to be kind of a spread-out thing, the signing of these guys?
I think it'll be spread out. I think Middleton will be the first piece to fall, and then we'll see what Brogdon does in restricted free agency. There's going to be teams out there that are going to give him some offer sheets, and you know he'll mull it over, he'll sign it. That will take a little bit longer, I believe, the process with that. And then you know the Bucks have a few days to decide if they want to match that offer that Brogdon gets. So I think Brogdon will take a little bit longer. I think guys like Lopez and Hill will take a little bit longer. I think Middleton will be pretty quick. I wouldn't be shocked if they already have a number in their head right now that Middleton's already said, okay, I'll come back for that. And then once free agency starts, he'll get signed pretty quick.
All right, great stuff, Cody. It's Cody Grant from the Zone Madison up in Madison. He's the host of the Dear Milwaukee podcast. And you know, Cody, I love talking to you because I love talking Bucks and Brewers. These are the Cub fans down here. I have to put up with this stuff for so long. So I appreciate having you on every once in a while just to keep me back to where I enjoy myself. I feel better about myself. So thanks
Absolutely.
A lot.
Absolutely. Anytime.
All right. Thanks a lot, Cody. Take care.
You too.
All right. That was Cody Grant from Zone Madison. We're going to take a break and wrap up today's edition of Randy and Company. You're listening to Sports Fan Radio 1330.
I had to give you the sign. I had to wait till the big, you know.
I know.
I know.
You sit there, you're head banging, and as soon as you get to that point, and then you get me, when the big intro comes in, you let me have my time to talk.
A little country.
A little country there. Okay. Actually, I like the beginning of that song. I'm not a big country fan, but I think that's kind of.
Do you know who sings it?
I have no idea.
Brantley Gilbert.
All right.
The Weeknd is what it's called.
Okay. And that's a guy, his name is backwards. Gilbert Brantley sounds like a real name, but Brantley Gilbert does not sound like one. It's not like his name is backwards.
Yeah, that's actually a good take.
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of my take, I've always said this. Maybe I brought this up before on the air before. If you have two first names, you're destined to be great.
So,
and especially in sports, I look at Jack Nicklaus, Michael Jordan, Babe Ruth, George Herman Ruth. That's three first names. LeBron James. Let's see who else I got out there. I mean, yeah.
Was LeBron popular before LeBron James, though?
I don't know, but that's his first name. Yeah. So that's two first names, LeBron and James.
What about Mike Scott?
Mike Scott would work. Aaron Rodgers would work. Well, Brett Favre would work, but Aaron Rodgers would work.
Someone's first name is Rodgers?
Well, technically, a baseball player, Rodgers Hornsby with an S. Yes.
Really? Okay. Yeah, it's just probably not as popular, but right. Okay. I get it.
But still Rodgers. So.
What about Tom Brady?
Tom Brady. There you go. See? They're all over there. I mean, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's a good point.
Do that, folks. Do it at home. Go through some of your favorite players and see how many favorite athletes and see how many of them have two first names. You'll be stunned.
We should do that for a segment sometime.
I don't know Muhammad Ali. It clashes Clay. Clay's the first name.
It's true.
So George Foreman wouldn't work.
What about Clay Matthews?
Clay Matthews would work. If you take Matthew.
Someone's first name is Matthews?
Well, but Matthew. Yeah. I mean, you could play off a little bit of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's all the time we got, folks. Thank you so much for being with us. We sure do appreciate you listening. We'll be back again on Monday with our good friend Mike Morig. We'll kind of recap the weekend. We've got some special guests coming up as well. Until then, stay tuned for Dan Patrick. Followed by Bill Michaels, followed by our good buddies Jake and Jackson on the Full Court Press. Until then, folks, have a great Friday. Have a great weekend. Take care.
Chris Bryant.